many people make a serious theological error. We think that we talk to Hashem. He's listening. We're lucky. He's not listening. We're not lucky. But he doesn't talk to us anymore. There's no more to be him. So Hashem is no longer in conversation with us. And in order to hear something from Hashem, we have to open up a Tanakh and hear his voice speaking from the Tanakh. Hear what Yeshayahu has to say. An old resident of the old city of Jerusalem from many years ago, the prophet Isaiah. Cool, you're in the old city, you think, here walked Yeshayahu, here walked David HaMelech, here walked David Ben-Gurion. A lot of Jewish history. So that's in order to get hear the voice of God, you need to look back in the old books. But that's a mistake, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us. How does he speak to us? Not through people, because there's no one getting up anymore and saying, Kol Amar Hashem, so said the Lord. I wonder if the prophets used to really speak in ancient English. You know, the Shakespearean English, like the old translations. Probably not. He speaks to us through events. An event happens, and you have to ask yourself, what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying? What is he telling me? And you have to know how to interpret the events. That's why Rav Putner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, used to say, he would explain why there are no Jewish history books. Isn't that interesting? If you look historically, Jews didn't write history books. We have Tanakh. After Tanakh, we have the Gemara, and we have Agadatas, but these are just lessons, these are spiritual truths. But history, we don't have history books. The question is, why not? Today, art schools put out history books, but this is in the last 20 years. From history books, you have Josephus, but Josephus wasn't one of the rabbis. Josephus wrote a history book, but he definitely wasn't. He wasn't considered. He wasn't doing it from the necessarily from a Torah perspective. So the answer is that in order to understand history, you need a Perush Rashi. You need to understand we have an event, and you have to know how to interpret the event. And if you just have an event and you don't know how to interpret the event, then it's meaningless. Because for us, we don't just want to know the facts. We want to know how it's going to affect our lives. So when you read a newspaper, they tell you what happened. They don't tell you why it happened or what God is saying to us. They just say, this is what happened. And by the way, you can't believe them. I just want to tell you right now. Anything I ever know what happened, I always read in the newspaper and they're always inaccurate. Even what happened this week, everything I read in the newspaper was inaccurate. Just details, this detail, that detail, how old the kid was, how many people were in his family, what exactly happened. There are always inaccuracies in the newspaper. But that's besides the point. Somebody once said, you can't believe anything in the newspaper except for the date. Somebody was standing next to him and he says, no, look at this newspaper, you can't believe the date. It's yesterday's paper. So, newspapers just tell you what happened at best, but not how to interpret them. What is God trying to say? Imagine you're reading the New York Times that this and this happened, and Hashem is telling us X, Y, and Z. That's not going to happen until Mashiach comes. But nevertheless, our job, as best as we can, is to try to look at events that happen to us in our lives and try to see in our personal lives and our collective lives what Hashem is trying to say to us, and then act accordingly. Because if we don't listen, then it was for naught. And that's what the Rambam says, that if a terrible thing happens to the Jewish people and you say it's by chance, the Rambam says you're an achzari. You're cruel. Why are you cruel? Because then it's going to happen again. Because you didn't get the message. But if you hear the message, then it doesn't have to happen again. So that's why it's very important to understand the message. Also, for those who were listening last night when we went to Merkez Harav and we heard the shir, so we also quoted the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, that if you don't take it to heart, you're an achzari. You're cruel. Why? Because this was a message. It was supposed to arouse you. It was supposed to awaken you. And if you don't take it to heart, it's all going to happen again until you wake up. Now what happens? Somebody's trying to wake you up. You're not waking up. So they slap you in the face. If you don't get woken up, you get another slap in the face. So you don't want to have two. You just want to have one. You want to hear the message loud and clear so that it doesn't happen again. And you see throughout, you read through Tanakh, and you see it's the same story again and again. Jewish people sinned. We got punished. We did tshuva, we cried out to God, God saved us, we relaxed, things were well, we started sinning again, we had a tzara, we cried out to God, God saves us, and just events, and that's been historically what happened to the Jewish people. We had it good, we forgot about God, Vayishim Neshur and Vayivat. I mean, the Torah already for, you know, already called it in advance, but that's our history, and that's our lives also, our personal lives. We make mistakes, and unfortunately, sometimes, what did someone say? Those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it. So we have to learn from history, so Chas V'Shalom, it doesn't repeat itself. So at the beginning of this week's parsha, Rashi talks about two types of korbanos. He talks about a korban shutfin and a korban sibur. What's a korban shutfin? A korban shutfin is a korban, it's a sacrifice, that belongs to partners. What's a korban sibur? A korban sibur is a korban that belongs to the congregation. So the obvious question is, a korban sibur and a korban shutfin is the same thing. A korban sibur is a lot of partners. Who's the partner? All the Jewish people. We all give money, we give our matzis a shekel, we give our half shekel to the Beis HaMikdash. And then the korbanos they bring in the Beis HaMikdash belong to all of us, so we're all partners in the korban. That might be correct, if it were, but it isn't. Why? Because a korban shutfin, explains the Maharal and others, belongs to each and every member. Each and every member has a chelek in this korban shutfin. That's what it means, partners. Like, for example, when you make partner, people want to make partner. Like, that's it. If you make partner, that's, you're set for life. I wish life weren't so short. So, partner means you have a partnership. I own 50%, you own 50%. That's not what a korban sibur is. A korban sibur, who Soloveitchik writes in his Sefer Alei Tshuva, he says, what's the tzibur? He says, She'en ol pi din hasach hakolel. It is not the final sum. What is the expression? That the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It is not a korban that 50 million people have a partnership in, have won 50 millionth of this korban. When you talk about a korban sibur, and it has different halachas, a korban shutfin has different halachas than a korban sibur. A shutfin means we all are partners, even if we all gave money. No matter how many people gave money, we all have a small partnership. But there's a different classification in halacha called a korban sibur, where it belongs to all of us at once. Ela ishiyut yichudit atzmit. It is one entity, one complete entity. Me'ein chativa bifnei atzma. It's like one organic whole, one spiritual entity. That's the tzibur. You talk about a korban tzibur. It's one kai Yisrael. It doesn't belong to a lot of people. It belongs to one big person. Who's that one person? The Jewish people. That's a tzibur. They even say the Rashi tells a tzibur. It's tzaddikim, beinonim, v'rishayim. Tzaddikim, mediocre people, and rishayim. And that's what constitutes a tzibur. So you have a shukup, they're partners. They all own a small part. But when you talk about a korban tzibur, which is a different type of korban, it's not that we're all partners in the korban. It's that there's one partner in the korban. Who's that one? All of us, as one organic whole, as one spiritual entity. So this has halachic ramifications, as I mentioned. And it also is a mystical concept. There's a mystical concept called Klal Yisrael. And this has a lot of ramifications on our lives and how we live our lives. And I would like to give an example of a Rambam, which, whenever I see this Rambam, I start shaking in my boots. That's why I don't wear boots. Okay. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuva, HaPorish Midarkei Tzibur, this in Perakim Alokhi Lalev, if you separate yourself from the congregation, again, this entity called Klal Yisrael, not individuals, not a lot of individuals, we're also a lot of individuals, but we're also one entity. If you separate from the community, even if you didn't do any sins, Elanibdo Me'adas Yisrael, you just separated yourself from the community of Israel, Ve'en Osem Mitzvah B'chlalan, and you don't do mitzvahs with them, V'lo Nichnas B'tzorasan, and you don't feel their pain, V'lo Mesanim B'tanisan, you don't fast when they are fasting, Elanibdo B'tarko Kechem Nigoyar, it's like you go on your way, you live your own life, you don't have anything to do with the Jewish people. It's like you're not a Jew. You don't have a chelik in Olam Haba. You lose your portion in the world to come. Now, this is a funny Rambam, because the Rambam is talking about a Jew who didn't do any Avera. Meaning, it could be a Jew, theoretically, who spends his whole life in a Beis Medrash with Svarim piled up to the ceiling, or one small computer disk with all the Svarim on them. Right today, that's what they do. Okay? Just sitting and learning Yom HaMalayla, He davens. He says all of Sefer Tehillim every day. He fasts every Monday and Thursday, and all the days in between except for Shabbos. Okay? He just has one little date, not with a girl, with a fruit, one little tiny date every night. Okay? And that's how he breaks his fast at 6 p.m. every evening. Mamish at tzaddik. At tzaddik. There's only one problem with this tzaddik. The problem is that it doesn't interest him what's happening to the Jews. He doesn't feel their pain. Something happened to Klal Yisrael. It doesn't bother him. He's learning. He's davening. He's at tzaddik. He's thinking about Hashem all day. He's meditating. But it doesn't bother him what happened to the Jewish people. He doesn't get a portion of the world to come. He didn't do one sin in his life. I'll be honest with you. If I go an hour without sinning, I'm already the happiest man in the world. You know, and if you know what a sin is, a person doesn't know what a sin is, he thinks, Referman, sins? Come on, give me a break. What's your sin? If you know what sinning is, I can tell you that we do one every few minutes probably. At best, every few minutes. At worst, every few seconds. So that's, this guy doesn't do any sins. All he does is mitzvahs. All he does is mitzvahs all day long, and he lives in Eretz Yisrael, lives in Yerushalayim, near HaKodesh, and he's at the Kotel, every day at 3 a.m., he's there early, he's davening, he says the whole Sefer Tehillim, and he goes into mikvah, he goes into a freezing, ice-cold mikvah, and he goes in there just to torture himself a little bit. Doesn't matter. If he doesn't feel pain for Klal Yisrael, he loses his chelek in Olam Haba. Now, normally, when you lose your portion of the world to come, what do you have to do? You have to do an Avera. What Avera did he do? So go through your 613 misses in your mind. One time a guy asked me in New York, he said to me, what are those strings coming out of your pants? So I said to him, well, it says in the Bible that we're supposed to wear strings to remind us of God's commandments. So he said, do they? I said to myself, well, I have to know them first. It's supposed to remind you of the 613 mitzvahs. I don't know what the 613 mitzvahs are. I know a couple of them. I know he's supposed to wear tzitzit, so that's one of them. Right? But Shabbos, tefillin, I can name three. But I said to myself, then I started learning the 613 mitzvahs. Okay, so we know, the more we know, the better. So there's the guy. If you go through it, you know the 613 mitzvahs, you go through them in your mind, he hasn't been overrun, he hasn't transgressed one. He's done all the 248 assays, and he hasn't done any of the reasons why those. What avera did he do? What did he do wrong? Why does he lose his portion of the world to come? It's a wonder of wonders, this Rambam. You lose your portion of the world to come, even though you didn't do an avera. And I can tell you a lot of people who do have errors who get a portion of the world to come. If you eat trade, you get a portion of the world to come. If you what's another error that people like to do? You have a TV, you're watching appropriate shows, portion of the world to come. You speak Lashon Hara from time to time, a little bit of Sheker, some Leitzanis, you have a portion of the world to come. You don't make a bracha before you eat or after, you only bench on Shabbos, portion of the world to come. You don't bench on Shabbos, portion of the world to come. You do all the mitzvahs, except for the fact that you don't care what happens to the Jewish people, you lose your portion of the world to come. So on a sefer, it's called the Tshuvas Hashana, on the Rambam. He explains very interesting. He says that the Jewish people are B'nai Olam Haba. We are connected to a spiritual world. That's what the world to come is. In order to get into this world, you need to be connected to the Jews. You know, it's like you have a country club. You know, all Jewish country club. You can't get membership to this club unless you're Jewish. If you don't identify with the Jewish people, there's no membership. A guy wants to get membership in a shul. He does all the mitzvahs in the Torah, but you say to him, I'm sorry, in order to be a member of this shul, it could be that he knows more than the rabbi. There are goyim who know more Torah than some rabbis. It's also true. But in order to get membership in this shul, you need to identify with the Jewish people. It doesn't matter how much you know, and it doesn't matter how many mitzvahs you do. So if you're not identifying with the Jewish people, then you lose your portion of the world to come, because it's a members only club. Now it happens to be that goyim, if they're a good guy, then they get a portion of the world to come also. But it's a different world to come. It's a different, we're flying first, they're flying business. They're also going to get a good place. I don't want to deny them that. But the Jewish people have their own special portion. It's also Meduik in the Rambam. Like that, the Rambam writes in one place, the goyim do have a portion of the world to come. The Rambam writes in another place, that only the Jews have a portion of the world to come. And the Rambam, with the Mefarshim, if you look at his Lashonos, the Rambam uses special Lashon every time. He took special terminology when he talks about the Jewish world to come, and when he talks about the Gentile world to come. Without getting into all the details and all the lundas, but you see that there are two different worlds to come. There's a Jewish world to come for people who identify with the who are Jews and identify with the Jewish people, and there's a Gentile world to come where people are good Gentiles. But if you're Jewish, you're not getting into Gentile world to come. No Jews allowed, like an old country club. Right? I wouldn't be a member of any country club that wanted me as a member. Right? You know the story of Groucho Marx? His daughter was once in a country club, and she was in the swimming pool, and they called him up and they said, "Mr. Marx, you know, you're going to have to take your daughter home. We found out that you're Jewish, and no Jews allowed in this country club." So Groucho, he was a comedian, Groucho. So he said, "Well, my daughter's only half Jewish, so can she stay in the pool up until her waist?" So the non-Jewish part will be up in the pool, and the Jewish part will be out of the pool. But I think they wanted her out of the country club. So if you're Jewish and you don't identify, you can't get into the non-Jewish Olam Haba because you're Jewish. But you can get into the Jewish Olam Haba because you're not identifying with the Jewish people. So I saw this Rambam, and I began to ponder. I began to say to myself, maybe you can look at the other side of the coin, and you can say that if you lose your portion in the world to come because you don't identify with the Jewish people, even though you might have done all Torah mitzvahs, maybe the more you identify with the Jewish people, the more of a portion you get in the world to come, even without Torah mitzvahs. Just the fact you identify as a Jew. So the truth is, I've seen this Rambam many times, but I just happened to have pondered that 2 or 3 days ago. And then all of a sudden, from Shemayim, God had me open up his sefer, and I saw that Rav Kook says exactly that. My luck. The Mishnah says, "Kol Yisrael yeshlam chelek l'olam haba." Right? We know at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, we say, "Kol Yisrael yesh." All the Jewish people have a portion in the world to come. You know what Rav Kook says that means? It means the entire nation has a portion. Not me and you. I'm an individual. I don't have a portion in the world to come. I have a portion in the world to come as a part of the community. So he says, this is the sefer of Rav Kook, it's called Olas Riyah. It's Rav Kook, who is the founder of Merkaz HaRav Yeshiva. No coincidences, my friends. In his sefer, in his commentary on the Siddur, writes, all of the nation of Israel, Bechativa Achas, one unit, Neshama Achasi, we are one soul. So when you look around the room, and you see you've got other bodies, you're right, there's a lot of bodies in this room, but there's only one Neshama. One big soul in this room, and one big soul for the whole Jewish people. And we come from a very special place. From the beginning of time, from Avram Avinu, until the end of the generation, we're one big soul, and we're all connected. And where do we come from? We come, Mishoresh HaAtid HaTov. We come from the root of a good future. In other words, we're not rooted only in the past. We're also rooted. That's why we're always waiting for Mashiach. We're always looking for the future. Why don't we live in the present? The reason we don't live in the present is because this isn't the ideal reality. This isn't true reality. This is just a waiting room. This is what we have to do. This is what we're working. Why do a person work hard? So we'll make money. We'll be able to come home at the end of the day and go on a nice vacation. That's what we're doing. We're working hard here. Not because we care about this company and this boring job we have. In the Chas Shalom, it's not a boring job. But we're doing a job in this world, and we're hopefully enjoying it as much as we can, because God made it pleasurable. But ultimately, we're here for the future, when we have a perfect world. What's a perfect world? Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. Only thing that matters is God. That's why. That's the Jewish people. The Jewish people are not living here in the present. The Jewish people are living from, like we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, to remind us of the shofar of Har Sinai, where we blew the shofar there, and we want to remember that. And the shofar of the Akedah, we want to remember that Avram was willing to sacrifice his son. And also, Vayom, we talk about shofar Gadol. At the end of the day, God's also going to blow a shofar. That's the Jewish people. We look at the past in order to learn how to live now, in order to teach us what our future is going to be like. But that's really where we're rooted in the future. That we all have a portion in this as a totality, as a collective. And he says, "Ba'achdus kedusha v'ayonazu ein hefresh min haklal l'achelek." And there's no difference between a part and a whole. Ha'or akoli meir b'chol chalakav. There's this big light that's on every single Jewish neshama, regardless. V'nimsa sha'achelek zochatami ba'osher haklal kula. As a individual, I am zochat olam haba. I'm going to have this great portion of the world to come. I'm going to be connected to God if I'm connected to the Jewish people. And then here Rav Kook said some very special words that made me happy. He said, "Gadlo v'tuvo, the largeness and the goodness of your portion in the world to come, tluyim heim, are contingent Be'echus HaKesh Shalom HaKal. Based on the quality of your connection to the community. Because since the ones who are getting the world to come are the Jewish people as a whole, the more you're connected to the community, the more world to come you get. The less you're connected to the community, then the less world to come, putting aside your mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are very nice. Tonight we're not talking about mitzvahs. We're just talking about something even more fundamental and more basic. Your basic identity. Is it as an individual? Or is it as a member of the Jewish people? If it's as an individual, then you weaken your connection to the world to come. Because you only get the world to come as a member of the Jewish... You have to be a member of the club. The more you identify with this club, the more of a portion you get. And if a person doesn't want to identify, he can be doing all the mitzvahs. But I'm sorry, if you don't identify, then there's no entrance. And then he also says, Shehein, hein, skula ha-Torah, mitzvahs ha-midos, tovah ha-amunah, obviously. And part of being connected to the community is that you do Torah mitzvahs. That's part of your membership in the community. And you learn, and you have good midos. It says in the pasuk, they have to remember Hashem, you have to remember God. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's the mitzvah of remembering God? Just say they're the God, and then just keep, that's the way the Goyim look at it. They say there's a God, and then they eat their cheeseburger, and they play their games. That's not the way a Jew does. A Jew, if you know there's a God, that changes everything. Rabbeinu Yonah says, every movement you make has to be a reflection of the fact that there's a God. So you remember, ah, there's a God, and then that you're acting differently. And that's how you connect yourself. So of course you connect yourself with Torah and mitzvahs. But it's more than that. He writes, Vas Kashrus, he writes, Rav Kook's a little flowery. It's Chaval, people are more into Rav Kook. He's changed your life. Anyone in the yeshiva wants Rav Kook shiurim? Free of charge. Worth millions. Vas Kashrus and Ishmasis Hamurgasha. And your soul connection to the Jewish people. That's, you have to have a soul connection. And then he continues, and we're not going to continue with it. But that is the connection to the cloud. You see that every day. We go to shul. Why do you have to go to shul? Don't go to shul. Daven at home. You don't have a sitter at home? I bet everyone in this room has a sitter at home. What do you need that? What do you need the help of the people in shul for? They're going to help you say the words. The truth is, I notice when I daven by myself, I daven a lot slower. Because I don't have to keep up with anybody, so I can actually say every word. And I notice when I'm in shul, it's hard to keep up with the chevr. Okay, but you go to a shul where they go at the same pace you would go on at home. How's the shul helping you? I often feel that I've done better. I go to shul, but I feel that I've done better by myself. So why do I go to shul? You know why I go to shul? And this real quick explains in his Sefer Ein Hayah and Maseches Brachos. Because God listens to the prayers of Jews who are in shul. When you're davening either with the community or at least at the same time. Even so, you know that your minion, your neighbor, starts at 6:45. So you're at least davening, at the very least, at 6:45 at the same time as the community. And the question is, that's the Gemara. The question is why? Why does God listen when we're davening as a community? Why doesn't God listen to me as an individual? What's the answer? The answer is exactly what we've been saying. That's who we are. We are a community, and God listens to us as a community. And therefore, we have to daven that way. You have to daven with other people. It's not just about me. You ever notice when your tefillahs, do you ever say anything about me? It's always about us. Right? We say, Hashiveinu Avinu, our Father. Everything's in Lashon Rabin. And the Gemara says, you should always daven the Lashon Rabin. I wonder, like sometimes I'm finished davening, and like people just walk out of shul, and I'm wondering why everybody isn't everybody else's best friend. Why? Why should we be each other's best friend? These masters of the universe, we just daven for each other. I didn't daven for myself. I daven for you. And you daven for me. Whenever I'm chazan and I say, Tiskabel, Tzlosan, Abahusan, the whole base Yisrael, Kadam, Abon, Dimishmaya. God, I want you to accept the prayers of all the Jewish people. So, if somebody really wants God, whenever I say that, I always go, God, accept the prayers of all the Jewish people. It's not just about me. I know what I need very well. What does my friend need? First of all, most of the time, we don't even know what our friend needs. So how can we daven for somebody if we don't know what they need? So Chazal gave us a nusach. We have a set liturgy. But when you're davening, it's obviously much more meaningful. If you can go around the shul and you can say, listen, I'm davening for this. Oh, that guy I know needs special parnasa. So when you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, you don't need parnasa. You're doing fine. Especially if your parents are supporting you. Right? But this guy, he has a job. He has to support his family. So I'm going to have a special kavana for him. And also him and him. We have kavana for everybody in shul. Oh, I know this guy needs a refuah, and this guy needs that, and this guy needs that. You're davening for everybody in shul. That is davening. And if you're davening for yourself, if all you can think about when you're davening is yourself, then if God just doesn't hear it, that's tefillas yachid. It's almost impossible that God should accept the tefillas yachid. For that you need, and even then, even when you daven by yourself, you still have to use Lashon Rabbim. So all davenings, you leave shul, I'm your best friend and you're my best friend because we just daven for each other. I always go up to the Kohanim after davening, not always, but sometimes, and I say facetiously, I heard that you love me. So like, and I go over there, I give him a hug. And they think I'm weird. Why am I weird? I'm weird because of my personality, but that's besides the point. Why else am I weird? Because what do you mean I love you? I don't even know you. I don't know you from a hole in the wall. Who are you? What, are you just a weird guy? You're a weird, loud American? I'm loud. I can't argue with that. I'm definitely American. You can hear my accent. Well, who are you? Well, 1 second, Mr. Cohen. You just said a minute ago, I share kiddushanu v'mitzvosu v'tzivanu levarechas amo Yisrael ve'ahava. Now, let's say a Cohen blesses the community without ahava. I'll tell you a secret. The Zohar says it doesn't work. God doesn't, birkas kohanim doesn't work if the Cohen doesn't love you. It says, don't even go up there. If you're a Cohen and you don't love every guy in shul, I don't mean you don't hate him. The Zohar says you have to love every guy in shul. You're blessing him with love. And when you're davening, you have to really care. And if you ever feel that somebody doesn't care about you, then he obviously doesn't daven. Because davening means that you care about every Jew. And that's one special thing about the Jewish people that's so remarkable. You don't find that in any other nation. Just think. Just imagine. Excuse me for a moment. I don't mean this in a racist way. But imagine there were like 100,000 blacks in some village in Africa, and one day they decided they want to be airlifted to New York City. Yeah, you think New York's, oh, they'll take them in, they'll put them up in hotels, they'll give them jobs, oh please, come. They'll support them, they'll put them on their feet. Nobody wants immigrants. In this world, in America, they try to keep everybody out. Some people sneak in. But Israel's not like that. They were Jews in Ethiopia, 20,000, 30,000 Jews. They airlifted them out. You're a Jew, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. If you're a Jew, other Jews care about you. How did the Zionist movement start? Theodor Herzl was no big tzaddik, but there was a blood libel against the Jews, against Dreyfus, and he was a French soldier, if I remember correctly. There was a blood libel against him, and that aroused a lot of anti-Semitism. And all of a sudden, Theodor Herzl, some assimilated Jew in Vienna, started to feel it. So we have to do something. It's always like that. A tragedy happened here, in Israel, and a Jew all over the world feels it. You don't have that anywhere else. That's somewhere all over the world they feel it. Something happens in America. So some Americans feel it. Some Americans don't feel it. But with Jews, not like that. You feel it deep into your kishkes. People flew. They heard a tragedy happen in Jerusalem. They flew to Israel. They're Menachem Avel. They had knasim. They had all these ceremonies. I don't want to say ceremony. It's a bad word, ceremony. They had all these gatherings, tefillah gatherings, and Talmud Torah gatherings. Because a Jew was shot in Yerushalayim. A few Jews. What do I care? There's some Israeli kids with funny Karabakh yarmulkes and long pays. What does it concern me? Answer is, we're Jewish. And we feel it. When one Jew gets hurt, all of us feel it, no matter where you're living. A Jew is stabbed in France. So, Fran, nobody here speaks French, except for a couple of English guys who probably speak French. And the Canadians, forget about it, it's your mother tongue. But that's what the Jewish people are. The Jewish people are a community, and that's what we have to be. And the problem is that we don't always feel it. We don't feel it a lot of times. Because Americans are taught to be individualists. What is an individualist? I have my life. I have my career. I have what I want to do, but I'll keep the mitzvahs. I'll keep kosher. If a person thinks that's what it means to be a Jew, then you're making a very big mistake. It's not just about keeping kosher, and it's not just about davening 3 times a day. It's about care and concern for every single Jew. And that's what I think. With this happened, I've never... This week, for me, has been the most... I've had the most emotional upheaval, possibly, that I've ever had in my life. Just this past week. From this Friday morning, this past Friday morning, when I found out fully what happened, until now, I've just been in a... Not myself. And I said, I don't want to forget this. Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is speaking to me, and we don't want this to repeat itself. And I've seen, I hope everybody's learning lessons from this. But I learned a number of lessons for myself. First of all, you see the power of Achdus. You know who hates the Zionists the most? Satmar. Satmar is so rabidly anti-Zionist. You read their writings and their apikorsim and their kofrim and their rishayim, and they're so evil. And they love Eretz Yisrael and it's Avodah Zarah. So this week, the Satmar Rebbe got up and he said, listen, Rabbi Isai. He got up in Brooklyn, in Monroe, in Kiryas Yoel. I don't know the politics, I don't know where they are, but I know he's in Satmar Rebbe. And he got up and he said, ladies and gentlemen, probably more correctly, gentlemen, we don't agree with them on every point. They have a different hashkafa than we do on certain issues, But you know what? They were Jewish boys, and they were learning Torah, and they were in a yeshiva, and they were shot, and we have to care. We have to care. So a Sadler guy is telling his Hasidim that they have to care about somebody in Merkaz Rav Kook. You know, Sadler and Rav Kook? Again, it's almost two different religions. And this is that. That's what we learn now. We learn now that it's not two. It's one religion. And it's one religion, and God reminds us when they come after all of us. Remember, when the Goyim don't like us, they come after all of us. In Eastern Europe, the Goyim didn't say, okay, we're going to choose which Jews we want to kill, and which the good Jews, the Jews who are like Goyim, we're going to keep alive. You know that in Nazi Germany, if a Jew wanted to convert to Christianity, they said, no, thank you. We'll kill you anyway. Doesn't matter, because your mother is Jewish, your father, you're Jewish, we see you as a Jew, you can do whatever you want, we're going to kill you. And that's exactly what happened with Haman. We have the story of Purim coming up. Haman comes around, and there were some Jews who sinned. And Haman said, there was one Jew who annoyed Haman. And Haman said, one Jew is annoying me? I think I'll just kill them all. That was a good excuse. Mordechai wouldn't bow down. I'll kill them all. And that's what God does to bring us together. And at all times, it's just unbelievable, the amount of people who paid shiva, thousands and tens of thousands. And everybody was so shaken by this event. And it really brought people together. And that a Jew should cry for another Jew. Why don't we cry for other Jews? Stop. The only people that are, how many of your brothers and sisters, Jewish people, not somebody in some hospital in who knows where, some faraway country. Jewish people, men, women, and children, who are in hospitals, they're dying of cancer. They're dying of cancer. To feel, to go and cry for them. Why does an Arab have to go into a room with a machine gun and shoot down innocent people for us to cry a little bit? So some people look for the political ramifications, but I'm not talking about politics. Just the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to feel for another Jew. What's the only way we're going to feel for another Jew? When you have eight angels, mamish angels, angels sitting and learning Torah, innocently, not hurting a soul, and then an Arab comes in and just, the last night somebody showed me where my neighbor ran into to run away from this. Thinking, this Arab, what does he think? What is this beast thinking? Okay, beasts don't think. But he comes in. Doesn't he realize the kid didn't do anything wrong? Doesn't he realize that his family is never going to be able to have the same simcha in life that they had before because of this? Doesn't he realize that he has a whole life ahead of him? They're just to kill another kid. I can't understand. But that's what he did. And it completely shakes me up. But it shouldn't be the only thing that shakes me up. Everything should shake me up. I hear that somebody is feeling any pain to feel for another Jew. And you see the lives they live. That's another lesson we can learn. You see, these kids, they're not like us. They weren't thinking about careers. Hey, my neighbor, he wanted to learn for a few years, and then he'll see. These kids in Merkaz, they don't start thinking about themselves till they're 25. You know that? They learn in yeshiva from 18 for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, because Rav Kook said, first you have to be a Talmud Chacham. Before anything, you have to be a Talmud Chacham. You have to make a living also. You have to be a Talmud Chacham. And then, after that, they go to the army, because it's a mitzvah to save the Jewish people. You have to protect your brothers and sisters. Not because they're Israeli citizens. If you're an Israeli citizen, you can get out of the army very easily. People on the left, people on the right, people in the center, all types of people get out of the army. They go, because their idea, it's a mitzvah, and they want to do that mitzvah also. And then when they're about 25, 26, 27, they say, okay, now how am I going to support my family? How am I going to support my family? And I want to do it in a way that I'm contributing to the Jewish people. And that's what these kids were. They were angels. They're really the sweetest. I can tell you my name. Such a sweet boy. They found in his knapsack, he had a booklet. They started a group called Begilu Berada. Begilu Berada means we should rejoice with trembling. What does it mean to rejoice with trembling? And Adar, a lot of times people go a little bit wild. They make the parties a little bit more Achashverosh parties than Mordechai parties. So what they wanted to do was, these 16, 17-year-old kids wanted to figure out a way to make Adar a more spiritual month. They shouldn't go overboard. They should do everything according to Torah. You see these kids, with the Mishnayos, you heard 70 times to go every month to do all of Shishi. Because we're kids just like you. We're just like you. But they were, their whole lives were about growth and the community and caring about the other people and growing in your Shemaim and in Torah and how we can have better midos and how we can get closer to Hashem and how we can daven better. That was their life. Such sweet. Every time I think about it, you just want to cry. It's so sweet. And they didn't do anything. And then you see the other side. You see the other side, you see, just kill it mercilessly. So we have to do this to the Arabs, we have to do that to the Arabs. It has nothing to do with the Arabs. Today Rav Katz spoke, And he said, people say, you know, we learn from this. You have to have more security in yeshivas. That's what you learn. He said, is that the lesson? That's what Hashem is telling us? Give more parnasa to the security guards? He said, of course you have to have more security in yeshivas. But that's not the lesson. The lesson is you look. Now you hear stories, and I can go on and on and on, telling you about Yochai Lifshitz, my neighbor, and telling you about the other kids, all the different stories. And it's real. It's not made up. I saw it on a day-to-day basis. And his parents saw it on a day-to-day basis. And his father said, he never once caused his father's son. Imagine a kid. Never once in his 17 years causing his father anguish. I can say about a lot of kids that I know, don't go 25 minutes without causing their parents anguish. He was just trying to do the right thing. And you know what he argued with his parents about? He wanted to do more schoolwork and they wanted him to take it easy. That's what he argued. And these kids, they're not abnormal kids. They laugh and they joke and they're filled with life. And they go on Tehillim, and they're normal kids just like you. There's only one slight difference. And the difference is that we're American, and that we're trained that our whole life is about career and about money. Money, money, money. And just today I was reading about Rav Kook. He said, after I talk about money for more than 10 minutes, when I have to, for halakhic reasons, I start getting a headache. So he couldn't sit on the Beis Din because of all this discussion about Chomer. Now I'm not saying you should be like Rav Kook. But I am saying that life is not only about money. That's a very important. That's the way these kids live their lives and their whole families. And I know two of the families, and the other six are like that also. It's not only about money. People think it is, and all the decisions in life are made about money. And I want you to go to college so you'll make money. I want you to have this job so you make money. I want you to live here so you make money. It's not only money. And I'll give you a good proof. It's not only money, because we're all going to a place very soon. Sooner or later, we're all here on a limited visa. I have a terminal illness myself, called life. Yes? We're all going to place, and it doesn't matter how much money you have. Now, these kids, Rav Moshe Shapiro's, Rav Lifshitz, who's the father of Yochai, so he was in Rav Moshe Shapiro's shul when he was killed. So he said, when Rav Moshe came to him to console him, he told him, Rav Moshe, you have a special kesher to my son. He said, the day my son was born 17 years ago, I was sitting in your shir. And the day, my night, my son was killed, I was also sitting in your shul. But he said to Rav Moshe, he said, why did this have to happen? Well, why did the what? You explain it. Rav Moshe's a makopel, he knows. He said, I want to tell you one thing. If your son would live 1,000 years, twice, 2,000 years, and learn and daven straight for 2,000 years, he would not get to the place in Gan Eden that he is now. For the rest of eternity, you die al Kiddush Hashem, even if you're not a religious Jew. You die for God, then you get a place in eternity that no one else gets. No one else, even the biggest tzaddikim. It's a tremendous school. I said, kin even for the father. I said, jealousy. I said, do you know what Olam Haba the father is going to get? For raising a perach, raising, that's when I walked into his house Friday morning, and I was crying. I said, I didn't know what to say. And he came up to me, he said, wasn't my son a perach? Wasn't my Yochai a perach? Wasn't he a flower? And he was such a sweet, edel boy. Such a pure boy. So this, he raised this pure boy, and now this pure boy is Makadi Shem Shemayim Barabim. Do you know what sort of Olam Haba his parents are going to get? Unreal. Now, I don't wish it upon myself, I don't wish it upon everybody. But what I do think, and with this I'll conclude, is I don't want anyone here to die Al Kiddush Hashem. But I want to say what the guy said last night. And that is, there's a concept of living Al Kiddush Hashem. And there's a concept of connecting to the people who died Al Kiddush Hashem. And you know what? People don't, they don't regret it. You hear all the stories in the Holocaust, and we told about Baruch Hanan, I mean, thousands and thousands of stories, and tens of thousands of Jews over the generations. We're happy to give our lives up for God. But we'd rather not lose our lives for God. We'd rather keep our lives for God. On the other hand, I want this special place in Gan Eden. I also want this special place of people who are killed, L'Shem Shamayim. L'Kadei Shem Shamayim. So how do I get that? So I had an answer. I said to myself, me, even though I'm much older than everybody who was killed, I'm going to connect to these people who are much greater than me, not only in their death, but even in their lifetime, they were much greater than me. I'm going to connect to them. I'm going to learn from their deeds and the way they live their lives. And then, like we said, the more you connect to Klal Yisrael, and the more you feel Klal Yisrael, then the more you shine to Olam Haba, the more of a place you have. So if you connect, it says it also about a rub, if you connect to a tzaddik, so then you're with him in God, you're with him in Olam Haba. If you connect to these tzaddikim, and you learn from their lives, then it's not, they didn't die for naught. They didn't die for no, we all grew from it. It's tremendous, such a Kiddush Hashem in Klal Yisrael. Everybody came together. Everyone was taking upon themselves different mitzvahs and mice and tofim because of these kids. And that's what we can do. And when we make decisions in life, not that you shouldn't earn a living. You should earn a living, and you should make a lot of money, and you should enjoy life. Of course. Of course. But that's not everything. Remember, in America, money is everything. They once told the Chafetz Chaim that time is, they said in America, on Rim, that time is, how does it go? Time is money? Time is money. So he said, I say just the opposite. I say, money is time. With money, you can buy time. Right? You can get places faster. You can make things easier. But that's all time is. The ultimate goal is the money. To live here. Not that nobody wants you to die, guys. We want you to live. But live, l'kadoshim shemayim. Sometimes it means sacrificing something that maybe your body wanted. Maybe. Maybe it means sometimes not having all the physical comforts. Maybe. But that's, these kids, they gave everything. They gave their lives, and I don't want to have to give my life, and we all pray that we should live long, 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 long lives. But when we're alive, that's dying al kiddush Hashem. Dying kiddush Hashem means you get it for minyan when you're too tired to get it for minyan. You killed your body a little bit. Dying al kiddush Hashem means that you don't bring, like my friend Yochai Lipschitz. He made a deal with his chavrusa. He said, you want to be my chavrusa? He says, you give me your cell phone before I be chavrusa, and I'm going to have it in my pocket, and I turn it off. And I said, what a great idea. What a great idea. I'm going to start doing that with my chavrusas. I'm going to tell each chavrusa, and before every shiur, I said to myself, it's a good idea, collect all the cell phones, because no one's paying attention. If you have a cell phone, and you're learning, you're not learning. If you have a cell phone in your pocket, and you're davening, I promise you, you can't daven with a cell phone in your pocket. And you can't learn with a cell phone in your pocket, because you always know on a subconscious level that you're connected to people in the outside world. And when you're learning, there is no outside world. So I thought about it, and I said to myself, I'm not a tzaddik like Yochai Lipschitz, because I don't have the guts to ask my chavrusas and the guys in the shir for their cell phones. Maybe I'll get up the guts. Maybe some of my chavrusas are here. Maybe they'll give them to me in advance. Maybe they won't even come to Seder with their cell phones. It's a little bit of death. A little bit of death is I'm going to sacrifice what? My cell phone so I can learn Torah properly. What else am I going to sacrifice? My summer. I want to spend the summer with girls dressed in short pants. I want it. But I'm going to sacrifice that and I'm going to spend the summer with guys dressed in long pants. Oh, how about that? Guys dressed in long pants. I want to go to NYU and go to business school and make $1 trillion. I'm going to sacrifice that and I'm going to be in a yeshiva with B'nai Torah and I'm going to connect to Klal Yisrael and I'm also going to be able to earn a living. It can be done, guys. There are people who went to yeshiva, learned Torah, and also made a living. It can be done. You don't have to be like the Goyim in order to earn money. B'halaya, they have our God on their dollar bill. So I give everybody here a bracha that we should all be zochem Yitzhak Hashem to live lives filled with Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And we should all grow from this. We shouldn't forget. They say, let's move on and forget about what happened. No. No, 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 no. We shouldn't forget. It happened this year for a reason when we were here in yeshiva. And we should grow and we should learn and we should read about them. And we should see how it's what take upon ourselves different things to change and to grow. And in that Tzchus Amir Tzashem, we will always serve Hashem the Simcha. 2, 3, 4. Hey, do it, Hashem, be simcha. Hey, do it, Hashem, be simcha. La 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 la